You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. I'm delighted that you are here. And I think you'll be delighted as well. I hope you get the habit, and I hope you come back each and every night. Also, a special welcome, I think, is in order for all of our newest members in our members area. We've had a number of people sign up within the past couple of days, and thank you for that. Welcome. We're glad to have you. Some news. Gary McKinnon is in the news again. British prosecutors made a decision today that they would not bring charges against Gary McKinnon in Great Britain. The Crown Prosecution Service said that a review had concluded it would be wrong for him to face trial at home. These were not random. I'm quoting now from what the Crown Prosecution Service said. They said, "These were not random experiments in computer hacking, but a deliberate effort to breach U.S. defense systems at a critical time, which caused well-documented damage." That's a quote from Allison Saunders, head of the Crown Prosecution Service Organized Crime Division. Continuing, Allison Saunders said, quote, "They may have been conducted from Mr. McKinnon's home computer, and in that sense there is a UK link. But the target and the damage were transatlantic." So he is... he has lost that round. There is yet one more decision that has to be made. They're reviewing a decision made by the British Home Secretary. And after that, it's pretty much all over. Depending on what they decide, he may be extradited. He may not be extradited, depending on that decision. But... according to this report, it says McKinnon is accused of causing the entire U.S. Army's Military District of Washington network of more than 2,000 computers to be shut down for 24 hours. And so, it's the saga rolls on. I don't know what they're going to do in the end here with Mr. McKinnon. I suspect that he is going to be extradited, but I don't know that to be a fact. I can't read the future, but I do suspect that he will be extradited and then will face charges here in the United States for his hacking into military computers. Scientists at MIT, this is also in the news, and I think it's a pretty important thing. Scientists at MIT are developing... a new plasma thruster rocket engine. And it's kind of the first step toward having actual plasma propulsion systems that they can use perhaps on manned spacecraft. But it will first be used not on manned spacecraft, but on satellites. But there you go. People have been telling me it'll never happen in my lifetime. Okay, time to die. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. A couple of real quick announcements. Don't forget, March the 2nd is when we're going to have that drawing for the tapestry that you just saw Jerry Wills holding up, in, if you're watching our TV channel. Also, don't forget that the music that you hear on every Kevin Smith Show is provided by independent artists. And we get that from either GarageBand.com or Music.Podshow.com. Good places to go. Ed Conrad has been making fossil discoveries for over 28 years. His discoveries have been, for the most part, blacklisted by academia. There have been numerous attempts to silence his voice. He's had several websites shut down by the hosting companies. And why? Well, apparently because his evidence blows a Titanic-sized hole in Darwinism. And for a Darwinist, attacking Darwin is tantamount to attacking God. Indeed, Darwin is God. For the religion that bears his name, the religion that has been substituted for science, the religion of Darwinism. Darwinism is a religion, as surely as is Catholicism or Buddhism. Now, there are many differences between Catholicism and Darwinism, many differences. But one really big difference is that Catholicism knows that it is a religion and it admits that it's a religion, while Darwinism tries to pass itself off as science, when in fact it is a belief system. My guest tonight is Ed Conrad, who has over 28 years of uncovering fossil evidence that he says destroys Darwinism. Ed, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Kevin. And I would like to first applaud you for your intestinal fortitude on bringing to light many subjects that are taboo.
Well, thank you for the mention and the compliment. You know, a couple of nights ago, I dealt with Darwinism pretty much head on. And it's not the first time.
Kevin, and you were right. You hit the nail right on. Absolutely.
Well, thank you. But I touched off a firestorm. You ought to see my email inbox. But see, here's the deal. If what I said isn't hitting nerves, no one would react. The reaction means I hit the target. I hit the bullseye. I didn't miss. Darwinism is a religion, and I don't mind. It's okay if people want to believe that. But that's the point. You have to believe it. You can't know it, because the fossil record does not provide one single fossil, not one out of the millions of fossils that have been dug up, not one single fossil that is trans species. And in order for Darwinism to be true, it only works if there are trans species. In other words, a frog that's not quite a frog because it's becoming a parrot. And so we have a frog parrot. Okay, well, we don't have any of those fossils. Out of all the millions of fossils, none of those have ever been dug up. So I said that, and there are people who... It's very unsettling when they've felt so confident that this is scientific knowledge. And then it's unsettling when they hear someone say, no, it isn't scientific and it isn't knowledge. It is a belief system. You believe in Darwin, fine, no problem. Just admit that's what you're doing.
Well, Kevin, let me interrupt one sec. Let me tell you this. The universities, the colleges, they have been brainwashing people, their students, for decades upon decades, okay? Now, I'm absolutely positive that I'm right and Darwin, the evolution theory, is non-existent. It is sheer bull, and I hope the word doesn't offend anybody.
It does. And as I asked you before you came on the air, we don't do that on this show. It can get you banned. Okay, so let's keep it straight.
Absolutely.
All right.
Still there, Kevin.
I am.
Kevin, let me give you a little background on myself. Growing up and into middle, you know, up in years, I had no thoughts on whether the theory of evolution was correct, okay? I figured it was because the scientific community was so strongly backing it. Then I find the specimens of which later turned out to be via testing, all kinds of testing. Petrified animal and human bones, teeth, and soft organs. And then I had encounters with, for example, the Smithsonian Institution. I was invited down to the Smithsonian, and they had four people greet me at the door: paleontologist, anthropologist, geologist, and a museum expert. They concluded after a cursory examination that the object was not a was certainly not a fossil. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I accepted their expertise. And we're talking about 10 minutes with them, Kevin. I drove 120 miles to get down there, and they shrugged me up in 10 minutes. But I respected their opinion until I was ready to leave, and I said, well, fellas, I appreciate your integrity, your honesty, your expertise. Instead of me taking this object home, we're talking about the giant skull that's on my webpage. I said, why don't I leave it here? Because you say it's nothing, so why should I take it back up to Pennsylvania? And they told me, they laughed, see? They were the first laughs that among the scientific community. They laughed and they said, what would you want us to do with it? I says, well, I certainly would break off the jaw area to see if there's teeth in there. And they laughed, and I left, and I came home. Then I eventually got into the jaw area with a nail to start it. It was like muddy. And to make a short story long, there were two protrusions inside. I sent a photograph of one to Wilton Krogman, the world-famous human anatomist and author of The Human Skeleton in Forensic Medicine. And he told me that it is a premolar tooth. I then had testing done at American Medical Laboratories on this object, and they concluded that indeed it is composed of elements of bone formation, of tooth formation. That was one of the ugly horror stories of the early days. I had terrible dealings with Penn State University. God bless Joe Paterno, but I have no use for Penn State University. They gave me three royal hosings in anthropology and paleontology and in entomology, because one of the other objects that I had found, Krogman identified as a portion of a giant prehistoric scorpion. So, In other words, as this in the early days, we're talking 27 years ago, I had encounters with the university, the prestigious people in education. The University of California at Berkeley, for example, I sent them specimens at their request, and they denied that the specimens ever arrived. I had to get a U.S. postal inspector to go into the Berkeley post office, the main post office in Berkeley, to get the evidence that these three specimens I sent them did indeed arrive and were signed for by a secretary in the Department of Paleontology.
All right, well, now let me ask you a question about that.
Once I let these people know, I contacted Berkeley then, and I told them, I have information that you did receive the package, and I would like my specimens back immediately, if not sooner. And the three pieces were sent back to me, and I looked them over, and it looked like, see, you must cut one of these for a ground section to determine whether the Haversian systems exist. You can only see that through a thin section.
Mm-hmm.
So I examined the three specimens, tiny specimens, and I noticed that none of them had been cut. They sure had the appearance of not being cut. And I happened to know a lapidary, a fellow involved in lapidary rock cutting, and I said, Nick, could you tell me whether any of these specimens have been cut? And he pointed to his sink in the kitchen. He says, go over there, run water on them. And I did. Here, one of the pieces was cut. That's all they needed. In other words, they knew it was bone. They had done the cutting, prepared the ground section, and examined it microscopically and knew. And yet the cover-up. I mean, the cover-ups that I've been involved in are beyond belief. That this scientific community would stoop so low to protect the Darwin theory. Now, Kevin, I'm sorry.
All right, I've got a question for you.
Yes, Kevin.
All right. Whenever you confronted them and you said, hey, wait a minute, I have proof that you guys did receive those specimens and I want them back, what did they say about why they had been denying that they had them?
Kevin, this goes back just to, I have to back up on the story. I was not stupid, of course. So when I sent them the three specimens, I sent them a registered letter. They were in a registered letter, little package. And the green card came back. And when the green card came back, there was no signature on it. It came back blank. This is humanly impossible. When you send certified mail, you have a signature. And it came back, and I went to the postmaster here in Hazleton where I had sent it from, and I went in his office and I told him, this is strange. I sent these three specimens to the University of California, and the green card comes back and there's no signature. He said, well, maybe a mistake was made. I'll send it back. So when it came back again, on the line that calls for the person it was sent to, there was nothing. And on the line below it was somebody else's name. And that's illegal also. That's illegal also. So, anyway, I had all kinds of... But Kevin, I must get backtrack one sec. So for the longest time in my life, I had no opinion on Darwin. That's absolutely. I assumed that the scientific establishment had plenty of evidence and then some, until I got studying evolution. And I have said many times, the theory of evolution does not have enough evidence to fit on the head of a pin.
You're exactly right. I have a couple of things that I want to say about that. However, I want to go back to the question. What did UC Berkeley say about why they were denying having these specimens?
They never answered. They never communicated with me. The specimens came back with no information whatsoever.
Okay.
They were returned to me.
Now, one of the things that I've gotten in my email here in the past couple of days since I touched off this controversy, and of course, since I don't like controversy, I try to avoid controversy. That's why I'm doing this show again tonight, this topic again tonight. But one of the things I've gotten here the past couple of days, Ed, I've gotten several emails where somebody says, well, now, wait a minute, you know, just look at how certain breeds of dogs have changed over the years, and look at how, you know, certain breeds of birds have changed. Yeah, I admit that. I'll buy that. But that's still dogs being dogs. It's still birds being birds.
Exactly.
You don't have any dog birds.
You're correct.
And in order for Darwinism to be true, there have to be trans species. Here's another thing that I've noticed. In order for Darwinism to be true, we've got multi-billions of organisms, trillions, jillions, gazillions of organisms alive on the planet right now. In every species, in every phyla, there ought to be some that are just ahead and some that are just behind. There ought to be some that are almost that species, and then there ought to be some that are just beyond that species. You ought to have some humans that are evolved to just beyond human, not quite there yet, and you ought to have some that haven't made it yet, and living on the earth right now that we could see with our eyes. Because the only way it would not happen is if evolution happened all in lockstep across the millennia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not even Darwin says it happens in lockstep. So where are the examples of living trans species right now?
Exactly. They're not there, Kevin.
Now, you found a fossil, or maybe it's not a fossil, but I don't know, but you found part of a very, very ancient human that has been dated to 280 million years old, right?
Exactly. Now, Kevin, the premise here is that geology is absolutely correct about its most golden rule. And its most golden rule is that anthracite coal, or coal, is at least 280 million years old. Also, they claim that anthracite coal is older than 280 into 300 some million. If geology is correct, and it's the golden rule, as I say, and this is the age of this material. All of my discoveries, Kevin, have been found between coal veins. A coal vein was removed. Some are 8 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, and this was beneath them. And it's not that I found... I had a national...
Okay, we're into a break, Ed. We will pick up right there when we come back. All right, folks, we will be back with Ed Conrad right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Ed Conrad. Ed, I had to cut you off right in the middle of something you were saying.
Yes. Kevin, a number of years ago, I'd say maybe 15 years ago, Tom Teed, who was a columnist, a syndicated columnist for, I believe, Newspaper Enterprise of America, or Association, NEA, he heard about me and came to Hazleton, met me at work. I worked for the paper at the time, And well, anyway, he ran he wrote a column about me. But while interviewing me, we were sitting in a restaurant in Hazleton, and he said, "Ed, could you give me an estimate of about how many of these fossils you have found between coal veins?" And I didn't answer right away. And he says, 12, was it 12 or 18 or maybe a two dozen? I said, "Tom, I'm glad you're sitting. I will tell you this. I have discovered probably as many as a million pieces of petrified bone." Now, I explained, I didn't take everything home. I only brought the best specimens home. But the fact is, I had 24 sites, and it was just loaded with the petrified bone. So unless the object something special, anything leaning to human or unusual in any way, I would save those. But everything else, I would let right where they were. Other people won't find them, I knew, because you need the eye. My eye was trained to find these specimens. And how I got to finding 24 sites, Kevin, is that the first site where I found both the first object, the huge skull-like object, not human, also the calvarium, the human, which Krogman identified as a human calvarium, which is a human skull with the eye sockets broken off. And he told me about that object. He said, he stated, it is the oldest human skull ever found. And on Saturday morning, I had a polygraph done here at my home, and that question was asked if Krogman had said that, stated that, and it's true. There was no evidence of deception.
On this past Saturday?
Back to these sites, the first site, I assumed that these objects I was finding were right below my feet. In other words, I was on a hill, and I assumed they were there. And about 2 years later, or 3 years later, I encountered a former miner in the town, and I said, "Do you know anything about this location?" And he says, "I sure do." He said, "I used to work down there." So I took him to the site where I was finding these objects, and I said, "I'm wondering, did these come from this site?" "Oh, no," he said, "I was a truck driver." He said, "It was down there about a quarter mile away." He said they were strip mining and got so deep in the earth that they had no place to put the remains, the dirt and the rocks and et cetera. And he says we would drive them up here, and he said this was level ground, and of course now it's a hill, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said that's all the debris. Now what that told me. Then I checked the mining maps, and I found out the location where this material came from, what particular vein was involved. And this was the start of it. I mean, once I knew where this vein was, because the veins keep rolling, and by checking maps, I found where these veins came near the surface, where the strip mining would occur, and searched there and searched there and searched there. And then I broadened. I found I had other maps from other areas like 15, 20 miles away, and searched those sites where these same veins were located. And but when I say millions, Kevin, I mean it is not out of reality. It is the truth. Because these specimens, you must understand, a lot of them are tiny, very tiny. A lot of them are much larger. But the fact is, they were there.
And all right, let me ask you a question about
that. I'm hoping sitting because There are, and I found upwards of a million of these specimens.
All right, let me ask you a question about this polygraph test.
Sure.
Now, you said you had a polygraph test taken this past Saturday, is that right?
Yes, Saturday morning, yep.
All right, why?
Because there is a fellow in Taipei, Taiwan. Kevin, it's funny. You would think somebody in the good old USA, an honest scientist, an honest anthropologist, of course there are none of those, honest physical anthropologists, a fella in Taipei, Taiwan, saw my webpage, read my webpage, and saw some of the photos. And he innocently wrote me an email and explaining that he really thinks I'm right. And you know what, Kevin? I believed in him. And he asked if I would send him, some specimens. And I did. And it got, and the next thing, he sent me a check in the mail after weeks went by, $2,000 toward my project.
Well, that was nice of him.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, that was great.
And then because of that, and because of his sincerity, I sent him other specimens. For example, half of the human femur that I have. I had part of the calvarium sliced off and sent to him. And he's been doing all kinds of testing. He claims it cost him over $50,000 already. Where are the American institutions? Nowhere. Here's a fellow from Taipei. His name is Lin Liangtai, Liangtai.
Well, we have listeners in Taipei.
Good.
So perhaps he's watching or listening, and
yes.
Or perhaps
now,
someone who knows him.
This way, Kevin. He felt that, he's put, I could never do it in 1,000 years, put together a summary of what I have and the testing results and explaining everything that I'm absent. In fact, he posted on the Internet, and it's probably still there. People could look it up. A $10,000 reward if anyone can prove that I am not correct.
Wow.
It's a standing offer, yeah. Now, we get back to the polygraph. He told me with all of his research, he really feels that I should have a polygraph done about location. And I had a polygraph done a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second polygraph I've had in a month. The first polygraph was about location, where I've been finding this material, and I've been finding it all in the coal region area. I'm in Shenandoah. I live in Shenandoah, and there's another town about 4 miles away named Mahanui City, and it's in this area that I've been finding all of this material, and I don't have to worry about anybody traveling, coming up here, et cetera, looking. They will never find them, Kevin. They will never find them. I lost, unfortunately, about, I would say, 15 or 16 of my best sites because of what they're doing here. They're burning coal comb to produce fly ash, and they're covering many, many, many football fields, and that's the area where about 15 or 16 sites were located.
Let me throw something in here. You said something about, you know, where are the American institutions in
absolutely.
This? All right. This is from George Washington University. Professor Brian Richmond just came out today. Professor Brian Richmond and his colleagues have discovered a set of human ancestor footprints in Kenya that show the earliest direct evidence of a modern human style of upright walking called bipedalism. All right, now that's what the article says. I left out one thing. I left out how old these footprints are. According to this article, 1.5 million years. And that makes them the second oldest that have been found according to this article.
Right.
All right, but what you are saying suggests that we have been on this planet for a very long time, much longer than 1.5 million years.
Absolutely. Well, Kevin, we may, this is possible that life may have existed and then sort of died out, and maybe for millions of years there was nothing, and then we sprung up again. You know, who or what was responsible, I don't know. So I'm not saying that life has continued all these years, but who knows? It's possible.
Well,
but anyway, may I react to your story?
Sure.
First of all, the only dating that is accepted by the geological associations of the universe is strata.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? As I said earlier, the golden rule of geology is the age of coal. Now, they're dating it at 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
They are dead wrong. This is total baloney, and I won't say the bad word. And I'll tell you why. Unless they have an object that is absolutely, totally, positively dated as 1.5 million, they must compare it. That then they would be, it would be possible to compare it to what they have found, these footprints. So the dating system using all these testing is they didn't. Kevin, I try to have potassium argon dating of my specimens, and I wrote to the National Oceanography outfit in near Los Angeles. And, yeah, they would potassium argon dated for me, $35,000 they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, no, I'm sorry. But footprints, Kevin, are not what I have.
Mm-hmm.
Footprints are not what I have.
You have bones,
I have,
right?
A human skull, mm-hmm, that had a CAT scan done on it. I have a femur that shows... The femur, Kevin, you probably know, the femur is an exact sizing of a human body.
Mm-hmm.
The human femur times four, the length of the human femur times four, gives you a person's exact height. And the human femur that I have found embedded in slate, embedded in the near cousin of coal, made the man out to be over 7 foot tall, 7.5 feet.
Oh, now see.
Formula.
Now you see. Now we're beginning to sort of get to why officialdom wants to silence this story. There have been skeletons of giants found all over America. And there are stories about, not just stories, but reports about, in newspapers about the Smithsonian Institute coming in to take over the archaeology and the investigation. All of a sudden, the skeleton disappears, and then there's no information coming out of the Smithsonian. When someone checks up on it, they are told, we have no record of that. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Ed Conrad, and we are talking about evidence that we, you and I, as a species, existed on this planet a lot longer than Darwinists say we did. We've been here a lot longer. When we went away for break, Ed, I was... talking about the fact that every time evidence comes up of former giants living on this planet, that evidence seems to disappear into a black hole at the Smithsonian. There are just tons of stories about that. And what do you know about that?
You mean the monumental cover-up, Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a monumental cover-up.
And all right, but why? Why did they not want us to know that there were giants here?
Of course, they don't want us to know that Darwin theory is total
baloney.
Baloney, if that's a safe word. This is the bottom line, Kevin. The university and college graduates who enter the fields of geology and anthropology and associated fields, they are forced when they take their first job, they cannot delve from the principles or the paradigm of the Darwin theory. And then the older, the longer they're in that job, they realize that if they open their mouth, they will be, they will threaten their vested interests. And if they threaten their vested interests, they're not only going to be kicked out of school or whatever, but they will find that they will not be able to get another job at any university or institution in America. Okay?
Yeah.
So that's what it boils down to.
Okay, but let me go back beyond that. Why? What's the reason behind why they don't want us to know that there is absolute evidence that giants once lived here? Why do they not want us to know that?
Kevin, that's a stumper for me. I would say, again, that anything that brings up the possibility of threatening the Darwin theory, they will not accept. Absolutely not. It's as simple as I could put it, you know. They're ingrained in this tradition, this sort of royal tradition of promoting evolution, and the vested interests prevent them from opening their mouth. Even though, Kevin, 90% of physical anthropologists and geologists know I am right. The evidence I have that Lin Liangte in Taipei has prepared is beyond overwhelming. And, Kevin, my son is listening to the show, and he had a note for me. He says, Dad, how about plugging your webpage? Is that okay, Kevin?
Sure, absolutely.
Sure. It's simply edconrad.com. And the funny thing is,
I think it's edconrad.org, isn't it?
4,000 hits on there. But I haven't been in business with the counter for about 9 years. It stopped all of a sudden, and no matter what I did, I couldn't get them. So it must be up to a million by now. But it's grounded at 178,000.
All right, now, but isn't it edconrad.org?
No, it's edconrad.com. I have two web pages.
Okay.
I got one in reserve in case I lost. I feared I lost edconrad.com, so then I got the edconrad.org. And I was able to get edconrad.com back. Edconrad.com is a lot better because it has photos of my the recent photos of my discoveries, where the original page does not. In other words, as I kept finding stuff, I never remade the page. But the new page, edconrad.com, does have the. So if you haven't been on that page, Kevin, edconrad.com, you'll see a finger with fingernail, a tiny finger with fingernail, which Lin Liangte insists is a toe. So, I mean, but whether they're fingers or toes. And the amazing part is, I found those two specimens within 2 feet of each other. One day while at one of my sites, I'm only looking from, you know, standing up, walking around, and one day, and this is no baloney, I said, I wonder if I got down on my knees and looked. And do you know I did, and do you know within 10 minutes I found two fingernails or toenail, and I mean, they're intriguing. But I have a petrified, a hemisphere of a human brain, Kevin, believe that or not. But they're all on that new page, so it's edconrad.com. Now, Kevin, could I sneak in one more horror story?
Yes, you may. We've got about 4 minutes.
The world, or he claims he is, the world's leading authority on prehistoric teeth is Alan Walker from Johns Hopkins University. And I contacted him, and I told him about some of my finds, and I told him that Wilton Krogman had identified it as a premolar. So he invited me down, but he says, I can't have you down right now, but, you know, I'll call you in a couple of weeks. He never called me. 6 months went by, I called him. He's on the phone. He said he's too busy to see me. Okay? I said, Dr. Walker. I used to call them all doctors, but they're not doctors. Dr. Walker, you told me months ago that you would have me down here. So live up to your word. When do you want me down? Tomorrow? And do you know? He says, well, okay. He says, I'll be in my office tomorrow morning. I drove down to Baltimore. Kevin, I went to the parking lot of Johns Hopkins. I think he was at the hospital then, university or hospital. And I went to park. It was paid parking, a guard there. And I said, I'm down to see Dr. Walker. And you would think he would let me ride in and park. I mean, I would pay, but he wouldn't even let me on the lot. And I says, well, how about calling Dr. Walker? And he did, and I was in my car waiting. And the guard said, he said to back out and double park on the street. So anyway, he comes down, and I open the trunk, and I show him some of my stuff. But I show him the jaw, which still had the tooth embedded. It's still embedded. And he looked at this, and he got a pad out and a pencil, and he starts scribbling like a third grader. And he's saying, it should look like this, it should look like that, and it should come down here, and I'm, you know, and it's total baloney. And I said, Dr. Mann, you're supposed to know you have expertise in this. Now, is it a tooth or isn't it? And you know what he said?
Hmm.
Yeah, it is, but you should have more than one tooth. That's what he told me. And that was the end of the story. I left them, and I had no more dealings with them. He admitted that what he was examining was a tooth. Yep.
And it's human.
Pardon?
It's a human tooth?
A human tooth. Mm-hmm. Well, Kevin, I never asked Dr. Krogman if it was a human tooth. Since it came out of the larger skull, I would say not. But I never mentioned human tooth to Dr. Mann. All I wanted to know if it was a tooth. And that's the object that we had tested with an infrared scan, and the report was that its formation or origin was tooth, the material that becomes a tooth. Hmm. So that's another horror story. But Kevin, listen,
we're almost into a break here.
You know, people becoming violent. Well, I'm probably the most violent or the most hated person in America with my stance against the scientific establishment.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll be back after this break, and I'll open the telephone line for you folks, so you can call in with your questions or comments for Ed Conrad. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Ed Conrad, and we're going to open up the telephone line so that you can call in and ask him your questions or make your comments in just a moment. I need to remind you that we have a seminar that deals not with the archaeology, but it deals with the question of origins coming up March the 29th. And you want to be sure that as soon as we open registration for that, that you register for the seminar. All right. Now, let's go to the telephone lines. Let me see. Let me, for those of you who are watching on our TV channel, let me put the number up for you. And for those of you who are listening via radio, the telephone number is 623-237-3814. 623-237-3814. The telephone line is open, and if you have a question or a comment, we would be glad to hear from you. And, Ed, we already have calls lining up, so let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Oh, yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Yeah, Kevin.
How's my phone line today?
It's a little quiet, but go ahead.
All right. Hello, Ed Conrad. A great show today, by the way, guys.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
Ed,
I don't know why we're getting a busy signal.
That humans are human life on this planet has been around here a lot longer than establishment science would have us believe. As you know, establishment science, they give us the flat Earth and everything else. So establishment science is obviously not credible. What are your thoughts on the fact that humans may not be originating from Earth, that we originate from somewhere else, perhaps Billy Meyer theory, perhaps?
I'm very familiar with Billy. Billy's an outcast, but he speaks the truth. Yes, I subscribe to that theory also. I don't know if I'm correct, but there is a distinct possibility that extraterrestrials did populate the Earth. And they may have done it for mining purposes eons ago. That's a possibility.
So you also contribute to the Zechariah Sitchin theory also?
I sure do.
Wow. Yeah, I just finished The Stairway to Heaven from Zechariah Sitchin. It's amazing. And the archaeology just pretty much proves what the theories of Zechariah Sitchin and also Billy Meyer with the fact that maybe we are the extraterrestrials on this planet, because, you know, being extraterrestrial means you're not from this Earth. And
right,
you're
exactly.
From somewhere else.
Right.
All right, thanks.
Kevin, before you go, here's something you must remember, and people out there should. Until the last four, several centuries, the blacks were congregated in Africa. The reds were congregated in North America. The Orientals were congregated in China, Taiwan, etc., the Far East. Is it possible that colonies were landed in these various areas?
Liren Wars, perhaps?
Is that possible? It is possible. Mm.
Yeah, when I think of that, I think back to the theory of the Liren Wars. I think it was Billy Meyer that came up with that. That some 22 million years ago, there was a cosmic war between different human races and reptilians, far light years away from here, and that to many of the refugees of that conflict came here, and that many different worlds harbor different kinds of human life, with the rule being that human life is the rule and not the exception in the galaxy, and that we're just either this is the planet of refugees or a planet of war criminals, you know, one or the other. That's one.
Who knows? We're another Australia from years ago.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much for the call and interesting thoughts. Maybe we are colonists. Okay, right. The telephone number is 623-237-3814, 623-237-3814, and we would be more than happy to hear from you. All right, caller, your first name, and from where are you calling?
Oh, hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Hi, Ryan.
Just a couple of questions. First of all, I was wondering, what kind of area was this found in? What was it, by water, or what kind of geography around it? And the second question how were you able to prove that it was 7 foot tall human? I'll just take the answer off the air.
Based on the simple medical formula that the human femur, the size of the human femur times 4 is the height of a person. That's documented fact. And the femur measured to the point where the person had to be at least 7.5 foot tall. And the bulbs, incidentally, of the femur were broken off a bit, so we could even add a couple inches to that, maybe 2 inches, which would make them 8 feet tall.
Okay. And what sort of geography was around?
Well, this is all mining area. This is the heart of the anthracite region. And under my feet, I'm in Shenandoah, my hometown here, we have, beneath my feet, there's 18 to 20 coal veins, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's 450 square miles of anthracite mining, and there's as many as 24 veins under certain locations. Years ago, they used to go deep into the mine and remove the coal. But over the past century, they've been using surface mining where they knew veins were near the surface and go down and remove the coal. And they'd go deeper. They'd hit 3-4 veins. And mm-hmm. I have found material beneath veins.
Okay. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Say 18 veins under my feet.
Okay, Ed, hang on.
You could search like heck.
Ed.
Between certain veins.
All right, caller, your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, Kevin, you're still a little quieter. He's coming in loud and clear, but you sound far away.
Good to hear that. All right.
Ohio.
Go ahead.
I got a comment first about, that guy from England hacking that you talked about.
Okay.
You know, I think that's really getting really blowed out of proportion. I mean, yeah, he did wrong, but you say his damages was that they shut down the computers for 24 hours or whatever.
Well, that's one. That's one of them.
But let's can't protect them any better than that.
All right, let's stick with our topic for tonight.
Someone else from or some other country from being able to get in there for a while.
Okay. All right. Let's stick with our topic for tonight.
Sir.
All right. Our topic for tonight is, we are here, and we have been here for a lot longer than what the Darwinists say we have been here, okay? The telephone number is 623-237-3814. I had Michael Cremo on this show a couple of years back, and he also talks about us being here on this planet for a lot longer or at least some race that looks a whole lot like us for a lot longer than what we get told by the Darwinists. Whenever this comes up, though, you see, Ed, what happens is people jump to conclusions. Oh, well, if you think Darwin is wrong, then you think that the church story of creation is right. And that's because they've been brainwashed into thinking that's the only two possibilities out there. It's not. Both of them are religious views. There are other possibilities. And it's you mentioned one, and that's the Zechariah Sitchin model.
But, of course, the key question, Kevin, is where did we come from? You know, what is our origin, whether we came from the stars, other planetary systems? What is our origin, you know?
Well, the human genome absolutely blows any possibility for Darwin's theory of evolution, blows it completely into oblivion. Because there are 223 genes in our genome that did not come from here. They have no evolutionary predecessors. That is according to the people working on the Human Genome Project. If you have only one gene that did not have any evolutionary predecessor, then it did not come from this planet. It's not from here. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. Well, I don't know why we don't have the caller. Let me try it again. Caller, are you with us? Apparently not. Okay. 623-237-3814.
Kevin, excuse me. Mm-hmm. Can I slip in with another quick story?
Sure. If you make it quick, we got a caller holding.
Okay. So I can talk?
Yeah. Just make it quick. We got a caller holding.
When I mentioned going down to the Smithsonian and met with these four so-called experts, and they called my the object I took down to them, the one that resembled a human skull, a concretion, which means it's nothing, created, you know, accidentally by nature. What they did not tell me, Kevin, is that, Mr. Conrad, we look your object over and we claim that it is a concretion and it never lived. But they did not tell me, Mr. Conrad, there is one test that could be done to prove that you have bone, and that is by taking a ground section of this specimen to determine whether it has Haversian canals. They did not tell me that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I accidentally learned that about a year later when I was up at McGill University in Canada, and a graduate student told me, just, you know, off the cuff, he said, well, If you're wondering if something lived at one time, even though it's turned to rock or so, you can always do look for Haversian canals. And I did that with my specimens, and it was I knew that they contained Haversian canals. And then I had testing done, and they do indeed contain Haversian canals. Now, Haversian canals are the minuscule tunnels in our bone as we grow, while living, we're growing, the bone is growing, and they carry nutrients and oxygen to our bone. And these tunnels, in petrification, these tunnels do not disappear or turn into anything. They, since there was nothing there to begin with, they remain circles.
Okay. All right, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Louisiana.
Hi, Trey.
Hey, guys. I want to thank your guests coming on and tell them congratulations that you were actually able to send something off this controversial, which it shouldn't be, and actually get it back and get results back. And so that's pretty, it's pretty hard to do in this field. And I just want to suggest something that when he's talking about evolution, I mean, he really should have said that, you know, life adapts, because life has to adapt to its surroundings. And once life is adapted to its surroundings and is still alive, then you can look at it and go, okay, what is it changed into? What has it evolved into? But it comes down to life adapting. It didn't evolution going, okay, it's time to evolve. It's surroundings forcing that, you know, thing to adapt and change, and that's all it is. But let me ask you this, Kevin. I mean, as far as evolution, the Darwin theory, does that actually involve us coming out of the ocean and winding up as monkeys or some kind of ape-like hominid and then turning into what we are now? Is that the exact deal that's taught?
Yeah, that's an abbreviated version of it, but that's it.
Okay. Well, the monkeys, for the monkeys to not evolve that we have now, but we were monkeys once and we had to evolve. Well, I wonder how they were able to be able to stay the same, but we had to change or we were going to die. See, that didn't make sense, though.
Yeah.
But anyways, I appreciate your guests coming on, and thanks for taking my call.
All right, thanks for the call.
Yeah, but listen, that, you know, your mention that we've evolved from monkeys, that there's no basis in fact in that. None.
No, but, you know, he had a good point. The point is natural selection, according to Darwin, would have done away with the monkeys once we were on the scene. Because we would have been a much more adapted and superior species, and so natural selection would say we get to live, but the monkeys would die off. That's what natural selection would do, but it didn't do that. All right, the telephone number is 623-237-3814. I want to clarify for those who are just sort of joining in, just now beginning to get into the stream here. I want to clarify for you that I am restating my highly controversial but absolutely factual statement. Darwin is dead, and his theory was dead on arrival. I give credit to Darwin for trying to take a look at things and reason things out. I give him credit for that. And, you know, I'm not just, I don't dismiss him as a nut. That's looking at things and trying to figure out how it works is what science is supposed to do. But after he wrote his book, science quit doing that, adopted his book, and adopted his theory and said, we believe, even though the fossil record doesn't support it. And so that's where we are. That's the deal. And now, whenever we talk about, and the last caller had a good point, when we talk about species changing now, you're talking about the species changing, but still within the species. Humans are taller than they were 200 years ago, on average. On average, we're heavier than we were even 100 years ago, on average. But we're still the same species. We haven't become something else, and we're not becoming something else. And dogs are still dogs. Turtles are still turtles. Snakes are still snakes. There's not even any such thing as a snake turtle. I mean, that would be closer than from reptile to human, but there's not even such a thing as a snake turtle. There's not any such thing as a whale gopher. I mean, there are no trans species, no cross over the species lines to become something else. In all the fossil record, there's not. 623-237-3814. If you have a comment or if you have a question, you think that I am absolutely wrong, feel free to call in and tell me that I'm absolutely wrong, and I'd like to know why you think I'm wrong. I'm not going to scorch you for that. I'm just going to ask you to explain to me where I'm wrong. And Ed, I made this statement on the show the other night. If somebody can show me a trans species fossil where there's no question about it, it is a crossover from one species to another, if they can show that to me, I'll reverse everything I just said. But with millions of fossils that have been dug up, no one has come up with a trans species. Let me ask you a question, Ed. When you found this femur and you calculated the height of the person that this femur would have come from, were you shocked?
No.
Why not?
No, I wasn't, Kevin.
Yeah, why not?
I was a bit surprised, but no, I rolled with the punches.
Does it bother you to know that there were people who were giants in the past? Does that shake you up? Does that bother you?
No, Kevin, absolutely not. But I'll tell you what does shake me up.
What's that?
these pieces, so many of them, Kevin, that I have found, they are cleanly broken. Okay. They are cleanly broken. I mean, as if someone took a hatchet, and you can't do that with petrified bone. But they are cleanly broken. And this would mean that it was a catastrophe was responsible for the loss of life.
What sort of catastrophe do you think happened?
Well, Velikovsky postulated a theory that an earthly body had passed Earth. And, of course, he's talking 3,000-4,000 years ago, but it certainly could have happened many times in our past. It caused an atmospheric change of such proportion that everything that could break was broken, unquote. And when I first started finding these, Kevin, these petrified specimens, I assumed that they were lifted with the shovel to be put on trucks, and they were broken, you know, when dumped where they were dumped, and that's when they were broken. But then I realized that that's impossible because they're all broken. Now, there were exceptions, like the femur that was embedded in a huge lump of slate. But that's the scary part, that some type of cataclysm indeed occurred at that period, and it would have happened during the time that coal was being formed, because they're found between coal veins.
So if I understand now what you just said about what Velikovsky says, some giant body like a planet or something passed close to Earth and caused such atmospheric compression that it just broke everything.
In a split second, it caused this enormous jolt that everything that can break was broken. In other words, the bodies were ripped apart, you know. I mean, this is his theory, and I'll go further with it. He claims that Velikovsky, the late great Emmanuel Velikovsky, in his book Worlds in Collision, published in 1950, he claims that his research in prior years revealed that the different tribes and worldwide, they would show the heavens, they would show the sun and the heavenly bodies, but there was no Venus. And then later on, he would come across the same maps, wall drawings and all, with Venus there. And his theory is that Venus was not a planet, had come near Earth and passed, not once, but passed, caused problems, and came around a second time and caused problems, and then it wound up in orbit and became our ninth planet. Theory.
Okay. Folks, we have to take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll continue with your telephone calls and with our guest, Ed Conrad. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Ed Conrad. We're talking about some pretty amazing discoveries that he has made, archaeological discoveries, discoveries of human remains from millions of years ago, at least based on the strata in which they were found. And it goes way back beyond what the Darwinists say in terms of humans being here on this planet. Now, we'll open the phone lines again in just a moment. First, Ed, let me ask you a question about this petrified finger that you found.
Yes.
Is this the one that has been, they did a CAT scan on it, and in fact, it's not just a stone that's shaped something like a human finger. It's got a bone down through the finger.
You know what, Kevin? No, I did not have a CAT scan done of that.
Okay.
I did have a CAT scan done of a gallbladder, a petrified gallbladder, human gallbladder, that revealed a gallstone.
Uh-huh.
And the people doing the testing were absolutely, totally amazed. But the finger, no. Unless Lin Liang Tay in Taipei has had that done. But I myself didn't do that on the finger.
All right. Now, let's talk about the gallstone.
Sure.
It was a gallbladder with a gallstone in it.
Uh-huh.
What strata did you find? How old was this?
Same strata as I'm finding everything else.
So it's at least 280 million years old.
Based on the fact, if geology is correct about its most golden rule, then the answer is yes.
Okay, so as far as geological dating is concerned, we're at 280 million or older.
Yes.
There aren't supposed to be any humans on the Earth at that time. So this can lead us in two directions. The first question, at that time, were there not dinosaurs roaming the Earth?
Nope, there was in that period of time there was nothing except possibly minuscule, not even reptiles, low life forms, if indeed they existed. Now, I'm saying that this is according to geology and paleontology and archaeology, there was nothing, no large land animals, nor human life during the time of the coal formations.
Okay, but we know for sure because you found human remains
right
at 280 million plus, we know for sure they were here.
Yep.
There had to have been then something that they lived on, something they ate.
Well, I imagine they had plenty to eat, Kevin. Forests, you know.
Okay, so you think maybe they were vegetarians.
Kevin, we don't even know whether these people were intelligent. Now, those who depict the caveman in a cave, unshaven, they could be, that could be completely hogwash, because this civilization may well have been as intelligent as you, may I include myself, or your listeners, intelligent, and a catastrophe occurred. What would you, Kevin, if a catastrophe occurred and you found yourself outside your studio with only the clothes on your back? Your home was destroyed. All your possessions were destroyed. We don't know. These
mm-hmm.
cavemen may have been the victim of a catastrophe, but brilliant men. But all life as they knew it ceased. No typewriters, no telephones, no vehicles. You know,
mm-hmm.
who knows?
Well, I find it interesting too that they were so much bigger than us. So let's go in the other direction. Because I said, the fact that we have human remains from 280 million plus years, according to the geological strata, could lead us in two directions. So let's run in the other direction. And the other direction is this. Is there any evidence whatsoever that these are possibly not human, that they may be a race of off-worlders that were here?
I really can't answer the question, but I would say that if you take Wilton Krugman's word, and he was, as I say, one of the world's foremost human anatomists, and he wrote the book that's in every doctor's office in the world, The Human Skeleton in Forensic Medicine. he examined and used calipers on you know, sizing the humans, the so-called human skull that I had, and he identified it as a calvarium with the, you know, a human skull with the eye sockets broken off. He also said that the ratio of length against width was right in the ballpark with humans of today, which is a ratio of your skull and mine. It's about 68%. He came up with 70 on the calvarium, but he said that is certainly acceptable. In other words, longer than wider.
Okay.
And of course, I had testing done on the interior of the calvarium, the one he identified as a human skull, testing done at American Medical Laboratories, and they determined that it contained dry blood and oxyphate, if I'm pronouncing the name. And so it lived at one time. And Krogman, the expert, identified it as a human skull. So Krogman was miles above any of those pseudoscientists at the Smithsonian.
And he not only identified it as a human skull, is this the same skull that he said that's the oldest human skull ever found?
Absolutely, absolutely. And Kevin, the human skull is the most easily identifiable of any bone of animal or human. I mean, it's the most identifiable of the human species, but also if you spread it around in other animals, the human skull is the most easily identifiable. But of course, he had the expertise to look for certain things. And I had a CAT scan done on that, the first CAT scan. I've had about, I'd say, 17 CAT scans done on my specimens over the years. But this was the first one, and on the surface you could only see one protrusion. And I was told by doctors earlier that there should be one on the other side, but it wasn't visible. It showed up in the CAT scan.
All right, now... was this human skull found in close proximity with the femur that you have, or are they two separate finds altogether?
They were two separate finds, and they were approximately 2 miles apart, Kevin. In other words, once I found about, you know, what veins I was finding that this material was coming from, and checking maps, then I checked other sites where the veins had run, and that's where I found the femur.
All right. Now, with this femur, did you find anything else in close proximity with this femur that possibly could belong to the same individual?
No, I have to say, to my knowledge, no. Kevin, I will tell you this, that not far, maybe 30 feet away, in a piece of slate, embedded in slate, there was what distinctly looked like a hand. Not a footprint, but a hand. Mm-hmm. Five fingers. And I went to pick it up, and it crumbled. It crumbled as I touched it. It was so loose on the top. And it was in a slanted position, so if I moved it, it just disappeared. Unfortunately, but I had a complete hand at one time, but I can't prove it.
What's your best guess as to what is your best guess, your best speculation as to how long these giants existed into? Did they live up into? Fairly modern times, 400 or 500 years ago, or were they all gone millions of years ago?
I think they were all gone, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were all gone. As I said earlier, this what I have discovered was the result of an absolute undeniable catastrophe. And so I figured they were all wiped out, and then man emerged again. If we were planted here from if we were placed here from other planets, it might have happened again. It might have happened quite a few times in our Earth's history, you know. But for that, I don't know.
There are lots of books and papers that have been written and people that have spoken out and on the theory that at one time mankind was highly developed, highly technological, and something happened, some great catastrophe, blew us back into basically the Stone Age, as you described earlier, and that we're only now just beginning to crawl out of that.
Right.
But it would seem to me that if that were the case, we ought to be finding bits of the technology that got blown up too. And we don't find that. Let's go to the telephone line. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Paul from New York.
Hi, Paul.
How you doing?
Good.
I have a question for your guest, Ed. How you doing tonight?
Fine, thank you.
I was wondering if you researched or looked into the Star Child skull, and what are your thoughts on it? Do you believe it's human of this Earth, or do you believe, as Lloyd Pye believes, that it could be a hybrid?
You know what? I have to be perfectly honest. I'm completely in the dark. I'm completely in the dark on that.
Okay.
Was it in the news recently, or?
No, it's been in the news for
quite a while. Yeah. He's had this skull. I believe he's got it. He had gotten it from somebody in Texas, somebody had found it in Mexico, in a cave, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And he swears that it's a hybrid. He had it tested, and it doesn't show any human type features on it.
Right.
You should research it. I think it's something you'd be interested in.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I have no faith in Darwin's theory at all, and it bothers me that my children are being taught this in school when there really is no proof of macroevolution at all.
Absolutely.
You know, when you look back, me personally, what the Sumerians had to say about it, and I've researched it a lot over the past year, it makes the most sense.
Paul, we're into a break. I want to thank you for your call, man. Always interesting. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. We'll be on Final Approach, but we'll still take one or two phone calls right after this break. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Ed Conrad, and we've been talking about his discoveries over the past 28 years that indicate that, in fact, Darwin missed it. The Darwinian theory doesn't fit the evidence. And that's what it comes down to. I don't have, folks, for those of you who are new, I don't have a religion. I'm not a religious individual. And so when I say Darwin is dead, that has absolutely nothing to do with my presumed religious beliefs, because I'm not religious. But just on the face of the evidence, Darwin's dead. Telephone number is 623-237-3814, 623-237-3814. We have time for probably one more call. We are on Final Approach. The last caller, Ed, said that he was disturbed that his children are being taught Darwin's theory or Darwinism in school. I don't mind if they teach it, as long as they teach that it's a theory. I don't mind if they teach creationism, as long as they teach it's a theory. Church story of creation is not the only creationist story that's out there, and they're all theories. And when it comes down to it, no one was around to see the origins of anything. So whatever one chooses to believe, they need to understand that it is a belief. It is, therefore, in the same category of religion.
The point is, support a theory that, as you say, and as I have proven emphatically, a Darwin theory doesn't have a bed to rest on. I mean, over the last 150 years, people have been conned, and now the evidence exists that Darwin, a good guy perhaps, but his theory is clung to by all the academics, the scientific establishment. You've got to dismiss this. You've got to clean the schools. You've got to knock this out. Not share it with creationism, but to eliminate it totally.
Well, here's the deal.
With another theory.
Here's the deal. Any theory of origins is a theory.
Right.
And, I don't mind if they teach the Buddhist creation story as a theory. I don't mind if they teach anything as a theory. And you simply say, we had this guy Darwin that his theory was this. But when you teach these things, you have to teach the weaknesses of each of them.
Right.
And you've got to present the whole case.
Right.
And that's not happening. And what I said on the previous show, I'll say again tonight for those who missed it. Darwinism is a religion. It is clung to religiously by establishment science, which isn't actually science very often. It's clung to religiously. It's a belief. As long as they will be honest and say that, I don't have a problem with it. But when they start trying to tell us that it's a fact, that's nonsense. Plus, one more thing. All of these people who are pro-Darwinism that are on these crusades against teaching creationism in the school, they say that creationism is religious and therefore should not come into the science class. On that basis, I said, and I say again, on that basis, if that's going to be how you keep creationism from being taught, because it's religious, on that basis, you must get Darwin out of the science class because it, too, is a religion.
Right.
So symmetry of logic demands that either you teach them all as theories or get them all out of the classroom on the basis of they are all religious beliefs.
Exactly. I agree, Kevin.
All right, look, we've got just a few minutes left. We've got about 4 minutes left.
Can I sneak in again?
Sure.
I participated in an exhibition of several months in both Switzerland and at Berlin, Germany, over the last 3-4 years. They assembled some of the artifacts, unusual artifacts from all around the world, and I was very happy and pleased to be part of it. But this is the point I want to bring up to you. I'm a veteran newspaper man, and I figured with a show like that going on for months, on the opening day, a newspaperman galore would be out and talking, interviewing the participants like myself from the U.S. with all these petrified bones, etc. And do you know that not one newspaper man showed up for the press conference? First was in Switzerland, the press conference. There was no articles in the newspaper about it and no reporters. Then we go to Berlin, which would be about, I think it was the next year, about 10 months later. Now, there are more newspapers in Berlin than in New York City, believe it or not. And not one newspaper man showed up, not a photographer, no one. We were totally shut out. And there's no question in my mind, as I say, I'm a veteran newspaper man, someone made a phone call and told these editors, stay the hell away.
Yeah, and exactly, you know something? This is what I'm talking about when very often I talk about how the mass media, major media, is inane and it's irrelevant because they're spoon feeding to do one thing, and that is to shape the thoughts and opinions of people. It's a form of mind control. They're not reporting the news anymore. They're not saying, you know, here is this meeting and here's what they said. They just shut that out and make sure that people don't even know about it. I don't think people are stupid. I think they're uninformed. And there's a big difference. There's a huge difference. I think people are uninformed because they're relying on major media and their television and their radios. They're relying on major media to tell them what's going on in the world. And, folks, major media is not doing it. Not doing it. And I won't get into it here tonight because we don't have time, but I've related stories before where I was involved in a major story that did get reported and got reported sideways. It was all twisted around and so that I couldn't even recognize it. And I was standing at the event watching it. Yeah. All right, look, very quickly, tell us one more time your web address.
I'm sorry, Kevin.
Yeah, tell us again your web address.
Oh, sure. It's simply Ed Conrad, EDCONRAD .com, and I'm a hated poster of the internet, and I've been driving them all crazy, embarrassing not only the scientific community but newspapers, major newspapers, and all.
Okay, Ed, we're out of time, folks. Thanks for being here this evening, and I hope you'll be here at our next meeting. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.